Hello and welcome to yet another episode of Pitchcraft. We're in conversation with the founder and CEO of Bluestone, one of India's leading jewelry brands, Gaurav Singh Kushwaha. Thank you very much for joining us on Pitchcraft. You know, before we dive into your deck, Gaurav, let's give some context here for our viewers on the Bluestone story. This was actually your second startup. After graduating from IIT, you worked at a tech firm and then Amazon. Then you started a website called Chakpak and Bluestone after that. So how did that transition happen? And Chakpak was actually into entertainment and Bollywood. And then you decided to start, go into jewelry. How did that happen?
So Chakpak, we started in 2007. Me along with my co-founder Nitin, we both were working in Amazon. And what was happening was when working in Amazon, we were working on a lot of products for global markets, for US markets and so on. And we realized that India actually lagged, quality Web 2.0. Web 2.0 was a big term at that time. So Web 2.0 portal around entertainment content, etc., which US had MySpace, US had IMDb, US had lots and lots of such. In fact, Rotten Tomatoes was also there, but India just did not have any of the quality offerings. We were passionate about movies. Like everyone else in India, we were also very passionate about movies. We used to watch movies almost every Friday. And so we decided to build something. And it started as more of a part-time kind of a thing that, okay, we have some free time at hand after office. So let's just build a portal, let's just put it up there. And then it started getting traction, started getting a lot of traction. We also realized the power of search engine optimization at that time. So we kind of naturally developed an act for it and we climbed to, I think, India's top 50 websites.
No, but again, how did you zero in on jewelry? Because you had the experience of working in horizontal, so-called horizontal marketplaces, Amazon. And then you worked with the Flipkart founders, I think, at Amazon. And then you also helped them with their search engine optimization.
We did.
When Flipkart, was taking off in 2008, 2009. So how did you make the leap that, I will do it in one vertical? And I will do it in jewelry, which is generally a high touch, high expense kind of venture. And back in 2011, people were comfortable buying books online, a few things online, but not gold and diamonds and everything.
Yeah. So e-commerce was an obvious one for me after Chakpak. We had seen the rise of Flipkart, Myntra and lots of other good services, good offerings that were there. Also, Amazon had launched Jungly and Amazon was about to enter
India in a big way.
Big way also. And having worked in Amazon, one thing I realized was a lot of categories do not have a natural differentiation from horizontals. So essentially, let's say you are operating in a certain category and you are the number one player in that particular vertical. But the day Amazon or Flipkart decides to put a tab, one more menu item on their header, saying that, okay, they are also selling this, suddenly you become a number two, number three player. So a lot of categories.
Clothes, fashion, furnishings.
Precisely. Yeah. And I think it's obvious. In India, it happened in, 2014-15, around that time. But in US, it had happened in 2006, 2007 already. And we had already seen that. So there's a website called VAG.com, which was into pet care. Now Amazon.
Even Zappos.
Zappos was the similar case, right? Zappos did good in shoes. But then Amazon decided to enter that category. They undercut them on pricing significantly and then they acquired them.
Correct.
Right? So we saw that behavior or that game playing out in a lot of other markets. And so I just wanted to make sure that it's a category which is a natural differentiation. So it cannot be or it should not be a category where you just take a box from someone, pack it and then ship it. Hmm. Because that's horizontal's game. So whatever category I was going to choose should have either supply side differentiation or demand side differentiation. Now, there are two or three categories where this differentiation kind of became obvious. One was grocery, because the supply side is very, very, very different, right? You cannot just, while selling books and mobiles, you cannot just put one more tab for vegetables and start using the same supply chain for that. You'll have to build a specialized supply chain. Furniture, in my mind, was differentiated because of the supply side. And jewelry was, and jewelry is differentiated both on the supply side and on the demand side. And what I mean by demand side is in offline world also, you don't see a lot of jewelry being sold through marketplaces, etc. Right? So there was that clear differentiation that in order to build a big jewelry business, you'll have to make a jewelry brand. And then on supply side, as we've now gone deeper all the way to the manufacturing. So a jeweler is always specialist in their own supply chain. So, and that does not align with marketplace's supply chains. And that's the reason why Amazon, Flipkart, no one has ever been able to successfully make inroads into this category.
Right. So, yeah. So without entering a jewelry store, how did you make this 33-page deck in 2011? And you got Axel to fund it at the idea stage. So when Axel invested in Bluestone in 2011, there was no website. There was
nothing.
There was literally nothing. They invested, you know, mainly in you.
That's right.
And what role did the deck play? And how did you go about making a deck? How did you do your market research for this? That, you know, you have a right to win in this space.
Sure. So so one thing that I did very early on, once I decided that this is the category I want to play in, was to build a good team of people who had experience in this category. So we had a person called Shipra. She came from the jewelry background. I had another junior from IIT who also worked in jewelry industry after that. So he went to IIM, then to a jewelry group. His name was Samir Gandhi. So I think these two, three people were there around me who gave me a lot and lots of insights on this. So, and we kind of, we built it, built the deck and then the company. Also, with their understanding. However, I'd like to, and I think in case of Axel, what had happened was Axel, we had already worked with Axel for almost 3 to 4 years. So Axel also had a very they had a good understanding and idea of what my capabilities are, what we can do, and so on. And I think the initial team also that we had put together, Axel quite liked it, and they felt that okay, this team can actually make inroads into this category.
How did you go about building the deck, Gaurav? Who helped you? What did you decide? I mean, how did you decide on what to put in, what to leave out? How long did it take for you to prepare the deck? What were your frames of reference? Did you, for instance, go through, I don't know, Tanishq, Titan's annual report or any other jewelry brand's report to see what they talk about? How did you go about it?
So on the deck side, because I'd been in startup space for almost 4 to 5 years, I'd created several decks for Chakpak also before that. I'd met almost 20-30 VCs pitching for Chakpak as well. So it's not something that I was doing for the first time. However, I think what was new this time was a deck where the business does not exist right now, right? In Chakpak, the business was always there whenever we created the deck.
So this is an idea stage deck.
And hence a lot of material, a lot of things which are there in this deck are about the market and not about the business per se. Right? So the purpose of this deck was then to actually convince a person, let's say Axel, and we spoke to a few other investors also. So to convince them on the potential of the market, on the market size, on the opportunity, etc. And I think, and hence we did look at Tanishq, we did look at, I think PC Jewelers also used to be there at that time, as a publicly traded company. And Tanishq was already big. Tanishq was already, I think it was more than $1 billion in market cap at that time itself.
Wow.
And what was also happening was that the shift was happening very, very rapidly from unorganized to organized. If you go back 30 years, let's say 90s, etc., almost all the jewelry was being bought from the family jewelers, the city jewelers.
Your family jeweler who would literally make it for you.
Precisely, yeah. Right? And right now, I think around 30% or so market has moved to organized. So the shift is happening in a very big market. The shift is happening at a very, very rapid pace. And we saw a lot of those things at that time, at the time of preparing the deck also. We also noticed few things that strengthened our belief that there's not a marketplace categories. Like in offline also people go to the destination and not, let's say, the jeweler who is nearest to you, right? Which is a very marketplace kind of a trade, that whatever is most convenient, just go buy from there. Convenience and price is not something that people are looking for in offline world. So we saw a lot of those traits also. We saw the sheer size of the market. What we also noticed was as we met in the sense, did online research, and then through Samir and Shipra, we've spoken to some of the players who were already operating in the category. When we spoke to them, what we also realized was their openness to adopting technology, or their, in different categories, people at a different stage. This category largely was dominated by legacy players, by family players, and so on, right? So when someone is second generation, third generation, for them to adopt to changes, especially the changes that the technology is bringing, is not that straightforward, right? A team of professional, because they keep getting churned. So let's say for a company like Unilever.
Don't you think the incumbents would argue that ultimately started online and then you have come to offline. That's an admission that, you know, offline ultimately is the way to go in India.
So, okay, so different for different categories. I am saying, okay, if you look at all the people around you right now, even if they're present in physical world, most of them are on their mobiles half of the time. Right, so whether a person is online, whether the person is offline, is actually is not. It's not. I'm saying it's not a. It's more of a continuum right now. Then it's a step function, that you are an offline person or you are an online person, and that is the kind of behavior that we are seeing in our business also. So different categories, people behave differently.
So if I look at, you know, what you've listed here, Gaurav, I think one of, you know, the things that you wanted to capture was the shift that you were seeing in the Indian jewelry market. As you outlined, you know, the patterns were changing from family jeweler, people were going for branded stuff. From plain metal, there was more emphasis on gems started. How did you see this play out? That, you know, it's not just marriage and festival season. There is gifting that's happening throughout the year and jewelry for fashion rather than an investment.
Yeah. So these were the behaviors that were clear to us once we started looking to the markets. And I think a lot of these have played out. So move from family jeweler to branded, this we have seen, right?
Yeah.
And not just us, but Titan, Tanishq growing as rapidly as they grew. And then Kalyan, Malabar, lots of other quality players also have actually...
You'll actually have a lot of company when you become a listed player.
That is so true. And it's good for us. I think, see... Another thing that I keep telling people is, if you look at apparel, right, it's a much, much smaller market in India. And you look at the number of brands that are there, number of quality players that are there. And if you look at jewelry, which is many folds bigger than apparel, you have a lot lesser quality people. So I think it has a scope of a lot of good players entering into the market. And then I think a lot of these other changes also that we spoke about, so more of a jewelry for fashion. And by what we mean by jewelry for fashion is jewelry which can actually be worn on, let's say, not such on smaller occasions also, on a usual day also, and not only on marriage. So the entire market was and continues to be largely focused on that big heavy pieces for wedding and those big occasions. But if you look at the way we have moved from joint families to nuclear families. Our occasions, we are not attending 10 marriages, 20 marriages every year these days, right? Just few functions maybe here and there. But then those big family occasions or family functions have now been replaced with smaller outings. What is working out wonderfully for us even right now is our design-led approach. And almost every customer who buys from us, they vouch for designs. Okay, the reason they bought from Bluestone was design.
Right. So the other thing, Gaurav, I think these two were very interesting. One was the target market. You've listed out four people, right? Internet savvy men, gifting market career women, and youth, college going first salary. Yeah. Which of this did not work out, and, you know, which was an addition in subsequent years?
So I would say largely none of these worked out. So what we realized was, men buy some jewelry for gifting purpose, etc.
Maybe you should change this to internet savvy married men.
Married men, yeah. Huh. And a lot of jewelry then comes back because the wife wants a return of that bad design that the husband bought.
Okay.
And she wants to replace it with a good design because the husband never knows what's good and what's bad. So, and that's why we have a 30-day money back policy also, that if you don't like something that your husband has gifted you, you can come back and replace it. So, this was our initial thesis, that these are the kind of people who would buy from us. Our big realization now is that our core TG is in like 25 to 45 years old. And what happens is typically people start buying with Bluestone, or a woman starts buying from Bluestone right after she gets married. And what we've realized is before marriage, a lot of girls, they do their gold and diamond jewelry shopping with their moms. And their mothers typically have their own favorite jeweler, their own family jeweler, and so on. But when a couple gets married, and when a couple starts living together, and when it's first birthday, first anniversary, first Valentine's Day, that is the time when they look for a new jeweler. And what's happening now is a lot of people are not living in the same cities where they grew up.
Right.
So someone who grew up in Lucknow might be living
in Bombay.
So there's no family jeweler and no association there. And these people, they find it more comforting to trust a national brand than a local jeweler in that particular city.
you know, this slide on product roadmap is very interesting. I think because it's an idea stage deck, you didn't hold yourself back. You know, phase one,
solitaire
diamond. Phase two, designer, traditional, men's accessories. And phase three, you went on to lifestyle, couture, high-end watches. When did you realize that I cannot do all of this?
I'm glad we don't have phase four and phase five in this. We'd be doing...
Phase four, maybe we would have had lab-grown diamonds.
So I think it was pretty elaborate at that time, or we had actually put in a lot of forward.
So did Axel ask you, Gaurav, aren't you doing too much, 10 categories, 15 categories in what is supposed to be a very niche, specialized business?
So I think some of those questions would have come, and I honestly don't remember how exactly I answered them, being a more mature a person in this particular category, I look at this and just looks that it's just way too much. In fact, what we realized was that most of the other online players, let's say be in India, be outside, were just focused on solitaires. And solitaires was something which was kind of
Even Carrot Lane was doing solitaires at that time.
Solitaire was a big hit among investors. But when we looked at the market, when we got into the business, we realized that what we want to do is jewelry. Solitaire is a very small category in India. And also solitaire is a very, it's a very specification driven purchase. That, okay, this is the size, this is the cut, this is the clarity and so on. And hence, the pricing pressure would always be there in such a category.
But just a quick follow-up, Gaurav. You know, the very advantages that you mentioned, right? You inventory-less model, asset-light model. Again, how has it changed now that you're heavily, you know, expanding offline? I think you're present in over 100 cities.
Yeah.
What are you doing differently? Because you'll have to encounter these same issues related to inventory. So, how did you have to sort of adjust your business?
True. That is true. So as we started rolling out more and more stores, our dependency or our need for inventory also kept on increasing. It keeps on increasing as we, along with every store comes inventory. I think what we are doing very, very differently is we are using a lot of data-driven approach to the entire merchandising process. For example, we don't, across 250 or plus stores that we have right now, we don't have a single merchandiser. There's actually a automation tool sitting in the back. Algorithms which use a lot of machine learning, they are sitting there and they are that algorithm is deciding what goes in what stores. So what we are trying to do right now also is we are trying to make sure that our inventory turns are more efficient, are much higher than the rest of the industry, and that we are still allowed to play that experimental game.
Right. You heard out Gaurav on the idea behind Bluestone, how he went about building a thesis for this in his pitch deck. But on the other side of the show, we will be bringing on board Prashant Prakash of Axel, who actually backed this idea, you know, before it even had a website and sales and product market fit and everything. What really convinced Axel to back Bluestone way back in 2011? Find out on the other side of Pitchcraft. Welcome back to Pitchcraft. As promised, we have one of Bluestone's early investors, Prashant Prakash of Axel, who invested in Bluestone when it was just an idea. Nothing was really executed then, Prashant.
Just the deck.
What gave you the conviction, or you know, what was it about this deck, or was it about the person behind the deck?
I mean, to be honest, I would say the person behind the deck first. So we had worked with Gaurav, and Gaurav had, you know, it was very early days, in the Erasmic days actually, that we started working together.
When he had Chakpak.
Chakpak. And Erasmic was, it was a small fund, and Gaurav knew Abhishek very well, Shubrato. We were almost working like a small family type of, so Chakpak was of like a family venture, you know, with Gaurav. So we were that intimately involved in it. And so we had come to know Gaurav, and Gaurav was also this SEO guru in those days. So Gaurav would help a lot of our portfolio companies, including Flipkart, across the board. And so he was somebody we knew had this unique skill to master something and do a great job in that.
Right. Prashant, you know, Bluestone was founded in 2011, and this was 3 years after you invested in Flipkart, right?
Yeah.
So you had already seen the potential that a horizontal marketplace has. Flipkart by then was already very buzzy, at least in
Bangalore. It already had raised a lot of money by then.
Yeah.
You had also started to see the whole mobile kind of phase of
And then you had
internet,
Myntra, which came in with fashion.
So we started to see that e-commerce is now in India going to be mainstream. Every category that you can think of will get disrupted with e-commerce. And that's when we did our classical prepared mind in Excel. And we went through and did a landscape of all the potential categories. And as you know, Abhishek Goyal ended up doing Urban Touch. So we did a bunch of these categories, and it was one of those serendipitous moments when in that list, jewelry stood out for us as one of the must-do verticals. And one of these days, we just were having this casual thing, and we had actually independently come to the same place. So we had done this prepared mind, and jewelry was top of stack for us. And Gaurav was after Chakpak thinking about what next. And he also, being from the Amazon days, probably was itching to do something in e-commerce. And he was just looking for the right e-commerce place. So it was just a good coincidence that we had a vertical focus by that time. And jewelry was important for us. And Gaurav came
right
with this.
And when you went through the deck again, you know, what stood out for you? Because as an investor, you want to know, okay, does this entrepreneur or founder have the right to win? How big is the market?
Yes.
How fast can they grow? You know, how big can it potentially be? Did this deck answer those questions for you? Because there is one particular slide on the Indian jewelry market and how big it can be.
So we wouldn't claim to be experts by then. I mean, of course, we had done a prepared mind, but we were still a little bit high level in terms of what in jewelry, but we started looking at global comparables. And that's when, our going in thesis was, you know, diamonds are important, right? Because globally, Blue Nile and a lot of these players had built their entire business around. And one good takeaway from this deck and the discussions we had when Gaurav was, because we as investors like to see this very different point of view from the founder. If a founder came with lots of areas of knowledge and expertise that we already have, then I think we should be running that business and not the founder. So in this case, it was that Gaurav came with these thoughts or these insights, which was for us novel and new, that, you know what, India is not going to be about diamonds only. I think India will lead with gold, and India will lead with designs, and also many other insights on inventory, and the fact that he wanted to actually virtualize the whole photography process. So we saw that Gaurav had, in the 6-7 months, had a very good understanding of how India is different, because that was already something that we were seeing in Flipkart and some of these categories, that taking a model from some other country and just replicating here
was not going to work. You have to approach it from first principles, like how Flipkart invented
exactly
the logistics, cash on
delivery. So that for us was kind of a little bit comforting, that Gaurav, and we knew that Gaurav does think first principles, and when he applies himself, he gets into the weeds in terms of getting insights on that category. And he was able to present a lot of that in the IC, that India is different, and why jewelry and the TAM was something that anyway in the first place was, like I said, Gaurav first, TAM was number two, and number three was just his insights on give us comfort that he had already understood what needs to be customized for India.
What kind of discussions came up during your IC meetings to approve Bluestone investment?
Right.
What were people skeptical of the most, or what were they most concerned about? Was it the competition, the size of market? What was it? Or the, you know, even the trust factor.
The trust, the touch and feel part, and even later, I would say it turned out to be a big acceleration point of the business, right? While the anchor for the business was still being able to do this virtual browsing and this infinite scroll and all of that were very important. I think we were a little bit skeptical that people would buy jewelry in India, slightly higher value product. So everything that we had seen people buy online in India till then were products with a very different price point.
Yeah, the average one would have been $500, $1,000, $1,500.
Very low price point, so very high on specification, like very, mobile.
Yeah, mobile.
The price point is high, but you know exactly what you're going to get.
What specs you're going to get.
Box.
Yeah. So I think we were skeptical about that. And that's one where, you know, some of these areas we have to just say, okay, the founder will figure it out, right? So that was one area. I think the second area is, in the other slide where you see the range of products that he wanted to do.
Yeah.
We really weren't sure that you had to do that many.
On
slide 13.
Yeah.
Because we thought that, okay, one part of it is a little bit of a standard jewelry company like what we have seen in India, but some of it is on the fashion and being like some of the global brands like Tiffany and which were very high, and we didn't know that how all of this would this high end, very high end jewelry and this slightly more functional and everyday wear, which was one of the, that's the other anchor we liked, that even a big competitor like Tanishq was heavily focused on the higher priced jewelry, and there was nobody giving you a great choice of designs. Because one thing about online that we did carry over in terms of thinking here is choice, right? So which I think people had gotten used to. So if you got the same offline choice and got it online, we knew that wouldn't work.
Right. Gaurav, you know, Prashant said that you approach things from first one. So when you ended up building the experience, the trust factor in Bluestone, which I think was very crucial, it started with, you know, the images itself. You figured out that you can't just click a picture and upload it. You'll have to do it in a different way. Then, you know, home visits where you had a special replica made of an alloy to assure people that this is what they would end up getting. Again, how did you sort of pick up on that? Did it just come with experience, discussion with some of those first employees or customer feedback? How did you go about it?
Yes, I think on the product visualization, we were just appalled with what we saw as the quality of the photographs. So the first pieces that we had, around 400 pieces, when we looked at the photographs, just it was actually pretty bad. And rightfully so.
See, and this is not a category. I remember the discussion that, hey, Gaurav, you can't be having thousands of
not
products and pay this much, right? And cataloging.
And see, these are reflecting surfaces and refracting surfaces. So gold is, metal is reflected, reflective, and diamond lets the light pass through. So it's not, it's a very, very difficult product to take a good photograph of. And then we looked around and said, okay, we need to do something. And then I started exploring this whole 3D rendering thing and realized that this is something that can be used meaningfully. And so we did a lot of experiments with that. We figured out that, okay, it is possible to make it work. And we're the first ones in the world to do 3D rendering for jewelry. And that actually took the visual appeal to a significantly higher level. In fact, almost all the investors said that, will you be able to make jewelry which is as beautiful as what this?
What was sort of the low point between, 2011 and 2024? Because, 2011, 2012, vertical commerce was taking off across categories. 2014, 15, there was a bit of a funding slump when you saw this huge consolidation among, online food delivery, grocery and so on. So what was the low point? Again, were there debates on should we find a strategic, should we continue building? And now, of course, Gaurav, you're getting ready to become a publicly listed company. But what was the low point in the last 10 years and how did you sort of navigate that?
See, then, I think there were points at which, while Gaurav ran a very capital efficient business, and you know, he maximized whatever capital we could put in as an early stage fund. I think the ecosystem in India did not have a lot of mid-stage funds. Funds that were, you had like Tiger, who had already invested in Carrot Lane, right? So the number of, and you need other funds who actually believed in vertical e-commerce. And like you said, there was a lot of e-commerce, vertical e-commerce that was going right and wrong. And so there was still not a lot of conviction necessarily that vertical e-commerce is here to stay and will be very large. So there was this dumbbell-shaped thing in India where you had a lot of early stage interest and then slightly late stage interest.
The ones in between.
So we had some of the existing investors, Kalari, and then Iron Pillar, thankfully at one point came in and bridged a little bit of that mid-stage gap.
Yeah.
Gaurav, largely that was mid-stage gap.
So that was what allowed us to take this journey into the omni-channel part. And like Prashant said, not too many funds were kind of applicable that part.
So Gaurav, 2025, if you have to build a D2C brand, a consumer brand, what would your advice be for founders? How should they go about it? Because a lot has changed, more awareness, willingness to spend, experiment, and distribution again has become very easy thanks to quick commerce platforms. How would you go about it?
Yeah, so I think it would be different for different kind of brands and different kind of place. So for brands and for categories like FMCG, like let's say healthy snacks, let's say new kind of toothpaste and so on, I think they can rely a lot on the quick commerce like Instamart, Blinkit, Zepto, etc. And then there's other category of products. So there are category of brands which are actually which rely heavily on, let's say, design differentiation, etc. Let's say if you're building a lifestyle brand, if you're building something in apparel, if you're building something where the visual side of the product or the design side of product can actually create a lot of pull, then I would say using platforms like Instagram, etc., where people are consuming a lot of content, and these platforms know a lot about the psyche of the users who are actually consuming this content. So using those platforms efficiently to sell different product to different people is now possible only now. Otherwise, it was very difficult. I mean, on Google also, while SEM, etc. was available to use, it was only that after the intent is built strong enough for someone to search on Google and then for you to show an ad to that person. What Instagram and TikTok are doing is they are even before the intent bubbles up, or even before the intent becomes so strong that you actually go to Myntra, Flipkart and so on to shop, these platforms, these machines know already that you're looking, that you will most likely buy a shoe, or you will most likely buy something like this, or you'll most likely buy, let's say, hair regrowth serum, right? So they can actually do a lot better job of kind of pushing it to these customers, and you can actually end up building very strong, very interesting place.
And if someone wants to build a jewelry brand?
Then, so I think it's a huge category. I think if you compare it to many of the categories like apparel, shoes, etc., and you look at the size of those categories and the number of good brands, good products available in those categories,
so there's still space.
So it's a huge category. And jewelry is like 6 to 7 times in the size of any other category with not more than 4 to 5 quality players. So lots of space, and it's a good category. It's not a category that you build in 1 year. I'm saying any other category, you can build very fast or very quickly in that category. This category has a gestation period of 10 years. So you're ready to wait for that much time, then you can actually end up building
I've been at it for
almost 13, 14 years. In fact, Tanishq struggled in the first 10 years of their life. So they started in 94 and started growing big after a significant time.
So if you want to build a jewelry brand, be prepared for the long haul.
People have done that over 3 generations also. So, yeah.
So I think building, so there's positives and negatives of the building using the existing channels. One is you don't control the channel over time.
The algorithm starts controlling.
And the channels can also dictate terms and can disrupt your product through white label products and so on. So I think being able to build quality products in categories over long periods of time, finding those will still be what will be long-term venture fundable, because you want ultimately as a brand to be the destination. I know it's difficult, right? So in some categories like jewelry, saying 10 years, there could be other categories where it's 8 years. But as an investor, we would still like to see entrepreneurs go after categories where the product engineering and, you know, the moats that you can build around the product as a brand will have you have a direct relationship with the customer over time. You can use social, and you should use social for many, many other things to gain momentum and to be present wherever you should be present as a brand. There's no reason not to be present everywhere. You should be present. But I think that building, that nothing substitutes building that relationships with the brand, and that is built on top of a high quality, well engineered product. So that's what we would like to see in companies that can be billion-dollar companies.
Right. Final question to both of you. Prashant, what's the next big milestone from Bluestone you're looking forward to, apart from their IPO, which I think will hopefully happen sometime this year?
I think with Bluestone, part of the country and part of the demographic that they have tapped is, I would say, just 30-35% of the final potential. So I think it's largely about just execution there. And I think there is a lot of efficiency still possible with AI, and there's a lot of AI-led design paradigm shifts that are there to be experimented with. So there's some exciting stuff that can come, and there are possibilities in manufacturing and design now that they control that entire stack, that they'll be able to innovate with materials that coexist with each other, which were never experimented with before. So me and Gaurav keep talking about people now wanting to see fusions of materials and designs which they've never seen before.
Right.
So I think you have to keep the bar high in terms of surprising people on possibilities with design, and that's really what is still exciting.
Right. Gaurav, what are you looking forward to?
So one of the things I will continue on what Prashant mentioned, which is basically the design innovations, which remains key focus for us. So, and a lot is possible. A lot of techniques, a lot of materials, etc. is possible, and people are open to those.
So like what we've seen with lab-grown...
Not exactly lab-grown, but let's say one of the products that we have is a steel bracelet with some gold, etc. around it. Now, that's a very interesting one, because the entire bracelet in gold, first of all, makes it a very high price point item. Second, there are a lot of interesting, the looks-wise also, that actually worked out very well for us. As a category, it has worked out very well for us. Watch jewelry as a category, which we launched, we're the first ones to launch in the country, that worked out very well for us. So on design, we keep on innovating. Beyond that, another thing that we are focused on is the entire category expansion part. So what had happened was, we were for the first half, first 7 to 8 years, we were largely online, and hence we were kind of very strong in certain categories which were lower price point categories, because those were the only products, or those were the only price points rather, that people were buying from Bluestone, and hence a chicken and egg problem, that you keep on creating more and more offerings. In those price point categories, whereas let's say categories like necklaces, bangles, which naturally fall into higher price point, were not moving online, and hence we did not do a lot of design innovations or design development in that. Now what's happening is, as we now have offline stores also, and secondly, as our customer base is also maturing, so the same woman who was, let's say, 30 year old 10 years back is now 40 year old, and her preferences, her kind of jewelry that she buys also expands in price point and spread also. So that is also something that we are exploring very, very actively, and so far there are some good signals on that also. So making it a wider base.
And I think there are options to go global. I think it's definitely a category where... these designs, I think, should find appeal everywhere.
So sometime back we did our trunk show in Bangalore. And that was in Leela, and I think 4 or 5 foreigner families or couples who were there in Leela, they just walked into the store and they ended up buying something. Right? So I think the designs have that appeal. They're not like so traditional that they don't have any applicability.
So they're contemporary enough for them to go with any kind of global fashion.
Great. On that note, Gaurav and Prashant, thank you very much for joining us on the second episode of Pitchcraft Season 2. And this is the Bluestone deck, the very first deck in 2011. Today, of course, you know it as this IPO-bound company that's just filed its DRHP. But if you want to catch hold of the 2011 deck, log on to seed2scale.com where you can download the entire deck, check out what the assumptions were for Bluestone back then. But thank you very much, Gaurav and Prashant, for this conversation.
Thank you, Chandra. Always nice.